Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:42 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 30th, and we had a big move in oil today. It was down $3 on Brent. We've had a succession of downward dynamics. This basically erodes any question as to whether the price was going to find support in the region of the trend mean. This is now a considerably larger pullback than we've seen in the course of the rebound since the beginning of this year. And we're in for a much more volatile period in terms of oil pricing. It also confirms that there is ample supply in the USA as the price approaches $80. It doesn't necessarily have to get to $80 in order for lots of additional supply to hit the market. And that's a significant piece of information, because we now have confirming evidence, as well as what we saw in 2018. We have another example this year of U.S. supply increasing as that $80 area is approached. The one defining characteristic of U.S. oil is that it is privately owned. So private operators have got their creditors they're responsible to. They have an onus to produce as much as possible at the most profitable point they possibly can in order to meet their debt obligations. That is completely different from the kind of environment we have from national oil companies, which have tended to try and support prices by limiting supply over the years. What it also helps to highlight is just how much of a force the private sector in oil production in the USA has become on the global sector, or in the global tapestry of oil production. And it is no exaggeration to say that the USA now is the swing producer in terms of oil prices globally. That is a profound change from what we had less than a decade ago. The introduction of unconventional oil and gas to the global market and the prospect of upwards of potentially 4 million barrels a day of exports within the next 5 years from the USA is a very significant factor. What it basically amounts to is that higher cost production, in other words, production that costs more to produce than $80 a barrel, is going to get shut in. And that is likely to remain the case until we have an environment where demand starts to outstrip available supply again. But it almost certainly amounts to a long, protracted, ranging environment for oil prices. And that removes a headwind from growth. I think that's one of the most important points. High oil prices are a headwind to global economic growth. So while it does certainly represent a headwind for the energy sector, what we also know is that it is a tailwind for all consumers. Now, the S&P 500 energy sector has failed in the region of the trend mean, and there is significant potential for it to go back down and test 400, potentially even exceed that. Then when we look at, for example, the FTSE 350 oil and gas producers index, this is primarily a share, an index dominated by Royal Dutch Shell, and the price is currently right in the region of that trend mean. So if we then look at, for example, British Petroleum, then it had been able to break up and out of its range over the course of the last couple of years, and there has also been a sequence of higher reaction lows, but it is definitely going to have to hold that 500p level if the benefit of the doubt is to be given to additional upside. The one bullish characteristic that Royal Dutch Shell has, at least, is that they're concentrating on natural gas prices, and natural gas remains very much, I think the best way to characterize it is that supply of natural gas remains a bull market. Demand is also likely to remain on a growth trajectory in excess of the growth rates of oil consumption. But it's not as if there's a shortage of gas around either. So that has contributed to UK gas prices plumbing the depths in much the same way that the UK price has, and it was at a new low in here today. Well, it was looking like we'd had a low of at least near-term significance back in April, and that was a significant rally that we had at the beginning of the month, and it has been completely exceeded here. So this is reasserting on the downside, and it is likely to, I think, plumb additional depths. What it also helps to highlight is that when we think of demand growth and the outlook for commodity demand over the medium or long term, then it doesn't tend to waver all that much, but supply changes a lot. So we have a surfeit of supply of both oil and gas at the moment, and that is compressing prices. And it's a similar story for copper. So when we think about the copper price, it has been trending downwards over the last few months, and having failed to sustain the break above the trend mean, it is coming back down now and quite likely to test the 200 or the $2.50 area. But it's doing that on a surfeit of supply. There's plenty of the stuff around. Whereas when we think about iron ore, then it is bucking that trend to a certain extent, because what we're seeing with the iron ore price is it is continuing to push on to new highs, and it hasn't traded at this higher level since 2014. It was in additional higher territory yesterday. But of course, the reason for that is because that of supply being locked in as a result of the dam bursts in Brazil, and that has had a meaningful effect on Vale, which is one of the three big iron ore producers. So it is very much a story of supply and demand that is explaining the difference in the performance of these commodities. Well, against that background, what I think is quite interesting is that Arabica coffee was able to push back above the dollar level in here today. So that is a clear upward dynamic. The pace of the downtrend has been moderating, and this is looking much more bullish than it has done in quite some time, with three rather dynamic moves in succession on the daily chart. Then, having had a reasonably weak day yesterday, we also saw that wheat, for example, was in positive territory and here today is back above the trend mean. Soybeans is continuing to rebound from the lower side of its range, and it is now in the region of the trend mean. And corn prices are also starting to do better from here and are now back testing those peaks from 2016. We're not quite at the point yet where there's going to be a contract change that has generally been a catalytic event in terms of short-term moves in the grain markets, but so that is suggesting that we could have some additional upside here before the contract change. But when we start to string all of this together, then what the continuous commodity index is doing is bouncing, and it's been ranging now for the better part of 3 years. So there is potential here that we're going to see some additional upside in terms of the commodity complex. And that's very late cycle or characteristic of late cycle activity. It's when you see that commodity prices start rallying from deeply depressed levels and do so on a sustained basis. That's generally representative of late cycle activity. Now, of course, the very big question that is outstanding is, when is the Federal Reserve going to start easing in terms of policy? They're on pause in terms of the interest rate, but that isn't the only source of potential easing that could be done. And they are due to stop contracting the balance sheet in September. Then it's likely they're going to have to start increasing it again. The relative strength of the dollar is inhibiting liquidity flow to the global economy. Now, the dollar was in negative territory just about in here today, and it is right at the upper side of its range. But this is still a reasonably bullish environment, and it's an inhibiting factor in terms of the enthusiasm that investors have for the global economy. what I thought was quite interesting, and I will post this this chart in comment of the day today, is the fact that when we look at imports to the USA from China, they are deteriorating and have been deteriorating all year, but there is a significant uptick in imports from ASEAN, Taiwan, and South Korea. Well, that is, I think, a rather significant factor. It's quite likely that we're going to see better performance from some of these economies, but the slowdown in Chinese demand and in Chinese manufacturing is a countervailing argument in terms of the outlook for them, and there is still a rather fragile environment in terms of sentiment. And part of the reason for that has been the strength of the dollar. So, for example, when we look at the Taiwanese market, it has paused in the region of the trend mean, and it is still above that psychological 10,000 level. And the Korean market has, having failed to sustain its breakout, is back testing its lows. Whereas when, for example, we look at India, there are some, I think, rather impressive conditions in terms of the outperformance that we're seeing. There aren't very many indices globally that are at new highs, and Narendra Modi's victory certainly contributed to some volatility last week, and we had that very significant downside Q reversal, which got no follow-through at all. What it also helps to highlight is that people are starting to look at the relative stability of the rupee, even though it has been somewhat weaker in here. But there is the potential for India to benefit more than just about any other country as a result of its demographics and the single party government, which is going to streamline decision making at the very least. What I also found interesting in here today is the fact that German unemployment has surged higher at the last reading. And we haven't had a meaningful move like this since 2009. I think that really does hammer home just why we're seeing this contraction in Bund yields. And it was at a new low for this move in here today, and coming back down to test this negative 20 basis point level, which we haven't really seen since 2016. And this is still really a very consistent trend. If we think about the DAX index, well, that is loaded with industrial type companies. They have been pausing over the course of the last month and is testing the region of the trend mean, but this hasn't been a particularly consistent chart since at least back in 2015. It definitely needs to hold the region of the trend mean if the upward bias is to be given the benefit of the doubt, and we are in the region of the lower side of this overhead trading range, and it's pausing around this 12,000 area. It really does need to push back above the 12,000 in order to truly demonstrate that we are back in a broad demand-dominated environment. Now, when we look at what's going on in the UK, well, everyone is still holding their breath about Brexit and exactly what is going to happen, and the FTSE 250 is right in the region of its trend mean also. So this is a potential area of support. In fact, we have a considerable number of markets that are in the region of their respective trend means. The S&P 500 was a little bit steadier in here today, and that is also right in the region of its trend mean. What I find particularly interesting is if we look at the logarithmic scale chart and do so over the space of at least the last 40 years, then what we're presented with was a secular bull market followed by a secular bear where the market just went sideways. But if we start putting moving averages on that, then what we can start to look at is, and this is a weekly chart, so we need 200 weeks, then what we're presented with is that a 200-week moving average represented an area of support during medium-term corrections all the way through the secular bull market. Wasn't particularly useful in a ranging environment, but then it started offering support again from 2011 onwards. There was another point of support in 2016 and another point of support in 2018. Well, we can talk about the S&P 500 finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average, and that's an important point where I think people will be concluding whether we're going to get a minor pause in the region of the previous peak or whether we're going to get a somewhat lengthier pause. But the much more important area of support for the secular bull market is that 1,000-day moving average. Because on average, prices should be rising over the progression of a secular bull market. And meaningful pullbacks, such as what we had at the end of last year, have generally been buying opportunities. That doesn't mean that we're not liable to have these lengthy pauses, similar to what we had in 15 and 16, and indeed over the course of the last year and a half. But the much bigger picture is that it needs to hold these ranges, and that these ranges, one above another, represent the hallmark of a reasonably consistent trending environment. With oil prices starting to come back down, that is something of a tailwind beginning to develop. And then we have the potential that central banks are going to start cutting interest rates. We've certainly started to see that in places like Australia and in South Africa. And they are, I think, the thin end of the wedge. We're going to see more countries cutting interest rates. And when we think about the outlook for the Australian market, it has a history of not sustaining upward breaks. That has certainly been a condition over the course of the last 3 years. So now that it has pushed on to test the $6,500 level, it's quite likely we're going to see some consolidation. When we think about markets that have been trending higher in a consistent manner, well, New Zealand is the only other market I can think of that has been testing new highs, but it's around the psychological 10,000 level, so I think we are at a point where some consolidation of these gains is looking more likely than not. Then I think we should be thinking about what's happening in terms of the domestic US economy, and the Russell 2000 has failed to find support in the region of the lows put in earlier this year. And it is back below its trend mean. Again, this has to find support above the low put in at the beginning of this year if the generally benign environment that's been in evidence over the last decade is going to be sustained. But this is now a lower high, and we're starting to get a lower low within this small trend. But so we definitely need to see some repair in here and some support coming through for the domestic environment. The banking sector is also looking a little ropey in here. In fact, you've got a lot of commonality between the banks and the Russell 2000. So this is also an index that needs to be able to demonstrate some support coming back in. When we think about the total assets of central banks, it made a new low in the middle of May, and it has paused over the last couple of weeks, but this is still a pretty consistent downtrend for all of this year, and that is representative of liquidity flowing out of markets. So we're still in an environment where we're in a corrective phase, and there is a lot of uncertainty about. We know what needs to happen. We need to see a new source of liquidity coming into the market. So far, China has been a little reticent to really tap on the accelerator in terms of provision of liquidity, but they are definitely supporting the stock market. And this pause around the 3,000 level really does look rather manufactured. Then the H share index has also paused over the course of the last week, but it has failed to sustain the break above the trend mean. It needs to hold that 10,000 level if we're still in a support building phase. Then, when we think about what's going on in the bond markets, they're sending a clear signal that the bond investors believe we're at the top of the interest rate cycle, and that the next area of potential resistance for prices is going to be around the 2% level. Well, we also know that a rule of thumb from the chart seminar is that a failed upside break, particularly when the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakout, that it will go back down and test the lower side of the range. Well, the lower side of the range is 1.5%, and this is still a consistent trend. It's pricing in that we are going to have a more difficult economic environment, or the other way of thinking about it is that there's going to be a lot more assistance coming through from central banks. The fact that German unemployment is starting to pick up and that there are so many yields that are compressing in the European region and an increasingly large number moving into negative territory, that's also pricing in that a German recession is the kind of thing that will change sentiment towards additional stimulus in Europe. That's also part of the reason why the euro has been so weak. And it is, while it was pretty much unchanged in here today, there is a very clear progression of lower rally highs in here. Now, when we think about the yield curve and the fact that the bond market is rather actively pricing in rate cuts, the 2 to 10 year yield curve spread is still around 15 basis points, so it has not inverted. But there is an inversion when we think about the 1 year and the 10 year, the 3 month and the 10 year. In fact, everything out to 1.5 year maturities yields more than the 2, 5, 7, and 10 years. So we have a significant belly in the curve, and that is representative of a very flat yield curve environment, very tight spreads, and that is an inhibition to credit growth. The fact that yields are so low, though, and have been going down, that's potentially good for mortgage approvals and credit demand. What we also need to pay attention to is when we think about the new orders in the manufacturing sector and the fact that they have been contracting, and generally speaking it's when they start to move below 50 and stay there, that's representative of the economics of manufacturing starting to underperform. So that is something to pay particular attention to, because we have at least have got a flat yield curve. And if that is confirmed with new orders or the Purchasing Managers Index dropping below 50, well, then that would be further confirmation of a slowing environment. And there is a downtrend in terms of these figures. So I think that is also something that we need to pay attention to, that there are lead indicators that have got a long history of being reliable that generally give us a significant lead in terms of slowing economic activity in future. So they are deteriorating. They're not flashing red yet, but that is very much a clear downtrend. So what that suggests is we are probably going to be in for some additional volatility in terms of the performance of the stock market, and it would be, I think, perhaps too much to hope for that we're going to start rallying straight back and up and through the highs in the short term. The NYSE FANG index was relatively unchanged in here today, but it does have a head and shoulder kind of characteristics, so it really does need to rally and to push back up through the 3000 level to renew its medium term bull market. Amazon is having got right back up to test that 2000 level, has been easing back over the course of the last while. So far it is still above the trend mean, and as long as that remains the case, I think people are going to remain reasonably favorably disposed towards the share, but it really does need to push back and through that 2000 level to renew the overall bull market environment. When we think about the log scale performance of the share over the course of the last decade, then that low put in at the end of last year is a very meaningful low in terms of the consistency of the overall unleveraged trend. So there are some questions that are still to be answered in terms of the integrity of the economy and the provision of liquidity that suggests we are going to be in a more volatile environment for the time being. We're also in the third year of the US presidential cycle. This is when we can anticipate that there is going to be some assistance provided to the market by the Federal Reserve. We haven't seen it yet. And until we do, I think we're probably going to be in a more volatile environment. I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.